Definitely, definitely.
I'm also making a website which has all the pictures. Called
really?
There
you go.
Travel, we're ready to go.
All right, great. Well, do you want to open or? Do you
come on in, we're just starting.
Testing.
We need more people.
I'm kind of new at this, so.
You want to keep this?
Okay. Leave it, we can do it afterwards. Or anyone else that wants to come up and see my vacation pictures, they're right here.
They're awesome pictures.
Great. You want to start? Oh, okay. Sure. We run here. All right. Well, first of all, I want to thank those of you that stuck around. The last forum that we had, or the last discussion panel that they had, covered a lot of material that we're going to cover here as well. the name of this one, of course, is Gathering the Guild. The original idea for this happened about a year ago when some members of an online guild that I'm in, including Freejack here in the front row, and myself and someone named Brodan decided we wanted to have an event where people who were playing the games could all come together and kind of meet one another, meet designers of the games, people who are designing fan sites, and so on and so forth. And this is kind of the beginnings of that. Here with me today are Ilanka Dunin of Simutronics Corporation. And everyone. She's helped out a lot with this, so thank you very much.
Sure, my
and
pleasure.
Then Lockworth, is you've been on these panels before in the past, as well as Ilanka.
Yeah.
So, great. Oh, there you go.
Got the cordless. Yeah, I've been in some online guilds in NM1 currently for an upcoming game, and so I'm gathered here with you guys for the Gathering of the Guilds.
Which game are you?
Atriarch. It's by World Fusion.
Okay, that one is about to enter beta.
Yeah.
The sign-up's just
started.
Yeah,
it's just started.
Okay. Who in here are members of online gaming guilds or clubs? Oh, yeah? Okay. Which guild are you with? And what games? On EverQuest? Okay. Which server do you play on? Okay. And you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also on EverQuest Guild? Okay. And Freejack's in the Lost Order of Akalabeth.
we're in all games?
Yeah, we started about 4 years ago in Ultima Online, and since then we've been in all the major releases since then. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great, okay. Do you have something in development? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember that one. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's hardcore deathmatch.
Yeah, I remember playing that while answering calls at MCI many, many an hour. Anyone else? Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm part of the Prophecy Guild, which is EverQuest Bertok server. We started as No Mercy, which was a Quake clan, and have migrated to EverQuest, and now migrating to Dark Ages of Camelot.
Okay, so you're going to be actually moving from game to game, or are you going to be having separate chapters, or?
It's mostly the same people. Mm-hmm. We're going to wait and take a wait and see attitude on Dark Ages to see how well it's going to work out. We're a little concerned on high end game whether it's strictly going to be PvP or if it's going to have big game dragon encounters.
Right.
If it's going to be straight PvP, I think we're going to kind of wean ourselves off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of if we wanted to play PvP all the time, we'd play Quake.
Right.
So we'll have players that play both, and obviously with routers and whatever, you can just put one machine by the other one. So we may actually play both at the same time.
Same time.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, that's so we have, a couple mostly EverQuest guilds, and then and some others. Okay, great. Well,
we're kind of like the oddballs out of the group.
Yeah, oddballs out of both groups.
I guess you could call what we are as a guild as far as a group together.
Yeah, we're starting a guild called Online Single Player Gaming, which isn't really multiplayer, but, you know, if you ever have, 10 minutes out of your time from work or whatever, you can play our deal.
It's the you know, out of all the multiplayer games, it's the turd in the punch bowl. But it's a damn shiny turd, and it's got a lot of kernels of corn in it.
Yeah.
Monthly type story environments?
Oh, yeah. One of our biggest goals is there's a Shockwave player that can now play Director 8 5 content in a full 3D world. And we totally see Crimson turning into a full online 3D world. And, of course, multiplayer gaming would be great. I'd have to work the storyline around that, though. But it's very attractive. But I wouldn't want a hack and slash. Would not want a hack and slash. It would have to be something along the lines of story. It'd take a lot of thinking, that's for sure. I don't know. I definitely have multiplayer ambitions, though, but not like Quake and Doom did.
Drops out, and you got basically a quest to accomplish within, like, say, an hour's worth of play.
I'm open to suggestions.
Environment, and then you have pretty much a world's history to work from. You know, pretty much you can jump from one topic to another. Use your imagination.
We were talking about somewhat of having a class system through our games if we were ever going to jump into that. Like, you'd start at the lowest of low, being a slave, and you'd have to work your way
Work up. Your way up to civilian.
But you couldn't be a god, because we'll be the gods.
Yeah. But, yeah, the... When the whole Crimson Legacy website is going to be part of the game as well. We're putting kind of a different twist to message boards. You know, we're actually going to give people things to do in order to achieve higher rankings on our message board, and maybe they'll get free items like a T-shirt or something. You know, but you know, we really want to. We feel like since we have no funding at all, one of the biggest problems we have right now is the lack of word spreading around about our deal. But if we give users the incentive to do it via our message boards and or whatever, incentive to move on through the ranks by maybe putting our banner ad on their site or whatever, then it would start, you know, really functioning by itself, which is what I'm hoping.
And basically, we started a work structure. I live like an hour's drive away from him. I do all the work in my house and send it via the internet. We got a guy in Waco that does this stuff.
Yeah, Gary does all the music, and we just met the first time last week. He's been working on this for a month and a half.
We just send stuff, and you know, that's only going to grow. And through our message boards, we're going to create people that are going to do the same. You know,
hopefully help us out on the game.
Contribute.
We got about 15 members, and it's everywhere from Europe to South America. It's about 8 of the members here in the U.S., and it's everything from designers, graphics artists, programmers, and everybody's just internet relay, news group, basically posting notes back and forth.
Right. That's what I think is the future of gaming. I mean, from a corporate structure type of standpoint, is that I don't think you should restrict like game or developers to just like Austin. You know, to develop a title. I mean, they're good all over the place, you know, and we like to take people in Korea, you know, or Japan, or wherever, people who can actually contribute to the actual style of the game instead of having it look like the other guy's title, you know, being that they work a block away from each other.
Or so. Just ripping off the Quake engine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Jack has a question.
I'm not sure we really want to get into developer issues, mm-hmm. but from a developer's perspective, professional developers, I work at Legend Entertainment, so we're doing Unreal 2 right now. And we certainly have a lot of in-house people, and we have people in Scotland and England and in Boston and stuff. And, you know, so they're not in-house, but we really prefer to have people in-house for the simple reason that trying to create a unified vision of a game is really difficult to do when you can't go downstairs to the artist's cave and ask them or talk to them about this. You know, even when you're sending stuff across the net, it's really cool. We have a great artist who does skins for our models, and he does this, you know, via the internet. But we brought him into house for a week to, like, get him an idea of what the unified vision is going to be on this, you know, and he sort of corrects his vision of what he was doing. And aligns it more with ours. But I think it really helps to have people in-house to work on this stuff together, which isn't to say you can't do it over distance. I managed artists like that where, you know, all of our modelers and all of our texture artists and all that were out of house. It was a big pain in the butt, and we never got quite what we wanted. You know, you have to keep sending things. Like, they send you a whole bunch of new models, and you got to, like, oh, man, it doesn't animate right, or it's all broken, you know, it's corrupt, and you got to send it back, and it takes, like, a month to get a single model that could be done in a couple of days in-house, correct, you know. And,
right. Yeah, well, how's your internet? Do you have an internet?
Yeah, well, not between people off-site, we don't, but, you know, standard transferring stuff.
Right.
They upload it to our FTP, our internal servers, you know, and we can check it out right from there. We have all team folders you can all jump into and check that stuff. And,
What we did, we actually tried doing this in April. We actually had a message board system where everyone could go on and download the storyboards. Everyone could. You know, I think with working, you know, I really wanted to see how much we could pump out in a month. And I had to really be, you know, I had to really hold back until, you know, August came around. Because I wanted to see what we could do. And one of the most important things that I found was that if the whole team sees the whole process, then it's easy for them to see it, or it's better for them to see, like, what everything's going to look like. Like, if the music guy is able to see the storyboards, you know, then he's able to grasp, like, what type of tone you're trying to achieve. How to develop his musical style based on your artistic style. Yeah, I think it's important not to segregate these guys into just little departments, you know, to just show them the full picture.
Okay,
you know?
And as that relates to guilds, how do you guys think that the overarching idea of the guild is best made, it's made sure that everyone gets what the main concept of the guild is? Is that a problem in the guilds that you are in? Or is everyone basically, okay, we understand that our guild does this and this?
Poor guy. The larger the guild, the more diverse the people that you have, the harder it is to maintain a specific goal. It's easy enough to say, well, let's get this dragon, this giant, on a single event type basis, it's easy enough to organize. But as far as how are we going to distribute any, particularly we're having loot issues, I don't know, but how do you distribute the items that you get? Who gets the say in what the decisions of the guild are, the leadership issues, are really, really hard. And it's helpful as games progress and as you when you get an opportunity to speak to developers that they give you more tools to manage your guild both in game and out of game. Sometimes you're limited on money for your own website. As everybody knows, a website's expensive to keep it up and running. But then communications tools in games, how do you help people in that respect? So we do have trouble keeping the guild focused because you're always going to end up with factions. We've got over 100 people in our guild right now, and there's 30 people want to go one way, 30 people want to go another way. So it is difficult to keep that going.
I'm really interested in what you were just saying about resources. I mean, I'm representing Simutronics. We've got our games Gemstone, Dragon Realm, Cyberstrike, Modus, Herkenzina, and we do have many other, we may not call them guilds, but we call them player-run organizations. Just out of curiosity, who here has played any of the Simutronics games at play.net? Okay, all right. So I'll describe it a little for those who haven't. So I guess I'm just really curious of the other guilds, the other games, what kind of resources do you have made available to you, or what is the minimum that you guys expect? And that way I can also check, are we providing the right stuff to our own people?
And I meant to answer what was being talked about just a second ago, too, but I kind of forgot. It was about managing the vision. When we were like 40 people, we had a very tight vision, and we were very proud of ourselves for that. You know, everyone that came in had the same concept, the same reasons for being there. But now that we're, you know, like 150 or so and over three primary games, that really fragments. We try and keep it, you know, the leaders will send out messages like, you know, this is our focus and our drive. This is what we're going for. This is how we want you to behave. And it's real tough. You know, we've been dealing with this lately where we have people who just aren't what we call LOA material. They aren't what we expect from our members. And we have to punish them or remove them or whatever it is to keep these people in line. And, yeah, it's real tough to keep focus over large groups of people. But then you have communications issues. And I think that's what assists in keeping that focus. And to answer your question about what do we have available to us, IRC is the primary form of communication. But that grew out of...
God help us.
Yeah.
That grew out of UO, where you could actually keep IRC client up and a UO client up. You know, what a brilliant idea here. We've licensed a copy of listserv, so we have 15 or so lists that different people belong to. We have the core list that all members must belong to be a member. And then we have a list for each chapter, you know, a UO list, an EverQuest list, an Atron's call list. And then we have, like... So
this is a listserv that's owned by the guild.
Right. We have people who have donated servers. We have two web servers. One's lostorder.com, one's gamecore.net, and that one's more of a general server. But we try and... we have, like, a web page that we keep, you know, like a primary page. Like, we focus ourselves on core for everybody and then chapters for all the different groups, all the different chapters. So people tend to identify exclusively with their own groups. And our goal as leaders of the overall guild is to say, look, there's other people in this guild. Associate with them, too. And one thing we've tried to do is every Wednesday since the time we were founded 5 years ago, is we have a Wednesday night meeting. And this is where we get as many people as we can together in IRC, and each chapter gives a report on what they're doing. You know, they say, this week we went and killed this dragon, or these are our new members this week, or these are the activities we're planning, or, you know, this member has a great announcement, you know, he just had a baby, whatever it is. It's something to get people involved.
How does that compare to, like, the EverQuest guilds?
EverQuest is tougher because they don't have external communication the same way we do. But it's weird. Each chapter sort of creates its own primary medium for communication. EverQuest chapter focuses nearly all its communication on our forums. So we have forums set up, too, you know, and we have chapter forums, and we have overall arching forums, and we have real-life forums, and all kinds of... our whole goal is to create as many forms of communication as we can.
Because the EverQuest client has a very limited interface for communication, I think you've got 255 characters that you can type at a time, and everything is happening in one window. So if you're going to have any sort of guild discussion, everybody has to go someplace that's both safe and quiet, or there's all kinds of extraneous things going on, including things occasionally trying to eat your head. So you're pretty much constrained to forums. And in our guild, because I'm... Annette Guy, I provide the hosting for the guild website and program forms as needed and provide, you know, make the graphics and all that stuff. That's my job in the guild. And so to the extent that you can get anyone to log off of EverQuest long enough to go look at the site and respond in the forums, it works pretty well. It is true, though, that it's... The bigger your guild gets, the more likely it is that small splinters of them are going to go herring off for the horizon to do something that isn't really what you had in mind or what the guild at large is supposed to be up to. And especially in EverQuest, where you don't have any way of sort of enforcing, say, would you please stop doing the thing that you're doing and come, you know, to the Wednesday night meeting that we're all supposed to be at? Leave the cougars alone. Quit poking them. Come to the meeting. And, you know... There's only a little bit within the context of the game that you can do to chase people out of the corners that they've walked into and make them be part of that community. When I first started with the guild that I'm in, the guild seemed to exist mainly as to have people to talk to when you didn't have anything better to do, and a sort of reduced pool of trading items back and forth. They, you know, if there were 30 people, they were in 30 different groups doing 30 different things and chatting idly to each other about what was on Comedy Central at the time. And after being frustrated, you know, repeatedly, endlessly trying to, you know, get together a decent group of people who knew what they were doing and weren't going to get me killed on a nightly basis, I went through and said, okay, all these people are my level and aren't playing the exact same thing that I'm playing. Mm-hmm. Okay, you, you know, we're going to be a fighting group now. We're going to work together. That way, you know, it's not constantly you've got five good people in your group and one person who just will not listen and stop doing, you know, random insane thing that drives everyone else crazy. And this was deemed to be a good plan, so we have little clusters of well-planned groups of diverse character classes, but all at the same level. So when you log on, your people are there, you're all doing the same thing, you're pretty much, you know, picking up where you left off the previous event, and you just keep going instead of spending your first hour of playtime standing in the middle of a zone screaming looking for group. This is really the only thing that I get out of being in a guild. I've been in guilds in several different game environments, and that's the thing that I've always gotten out of it, is having the relationship with a group of people that you know you can depend on, and you're going to be able to get more things done more quickly because you don't spend a lot of downtime just trying to get something started.
Yeah, it's a small family that you can kind of depend on and play with and pretty much trust. Is this true of everyone else out there that's in a guild? Well, we kind of touched on this. Why are you in a guild? Besides the family part, in your specific game, what does it benefit you to be in a guild? Like group up or in Ultima Online or the upcoming Shadowbane release, what do you think will benefit you to be in the guild?
I want to briefly touch on one point that we kind of browsed over, is what tools you're looking for in-game particularly to help you manage your guild. One of the things, if you paid attention to Dark Ages of Camelot, what they're doing is they're adding additional channels for, I guess, level of guild chat. Everyone who's in a guild in EverQuest, you have an option to turn guild chat on. So 100 people all have a chat channel in-game that is specific to the guild. But it's an all-or-nothing deal. There's no separate officer channel. And if you have guests who are invited to the guild for a day or two, recruits, so to speak, it's an all-or-nothing deal. Dark Ages has got, I believe, 10 levels of chat. From the highest level, you could set these three officers to the next level, to however you want to dissect your membership. So that kind of ability is what we're looking for. Right now you've got the all or nothing guild chat, or you try and get your officers into groups. We have 10 officers. EverQuest is a maximum of 6 people in a group. Obviously won't work. So there's no private channel for the officers to speak in. So we're looking for those kind of tools. Recently, EverQuest allows you to store a message of the day, where when a guild member logs in, he or she sees the guild message of the day. We are going to do this dragon at this time. That functionality didn't exist for the first 3 years or 2 years or however long. So that's been very helpful that we could do that. We're looking for some type of message board where you could post more than one of these messages of the day, where you could go to a specific place, a city, a building, whatever, that is your guild hall, right, where you could post messages, whether they're 10 lines or 30 characters or whatever. But any way of doing that would be great, because a lot of our members don't have multiple computers. When they're in EverQuest, they're in EverQuest. You can't alt-tab out. So you can use game voice to a limited degree, but then everybody has to log into it. Then you're asking people to buy hardware, and modem users and game voice, just not happening. So you've got a limited number of people who've got two computers. Some of them are in IRC, some of them are not. It's very hard to communicate, as you know, as we pointed out. So we're looking for in-game message posting ability. We're looking for separate channels similar to something that Dark Ages has. So that's the point I wanted to touch on there. I think we migrated into what do we get out of a guild as far as EverQuest. The biggest surprise to me out of a guild has been out-of-game relationships have formed. People that, you know, turns out live miles away, states away, whatever, we're gathering together for movies or dinners, or we've had people meet and get married. I mean, it's been just that part of the online gaming community has been the surprise of all of that to me. In-game, it's a group of people hopefully focused on whatever goal that it is, but it's that out-of-game relationship that I enjoy the most out of a guild.
If I could, I think one thing we might want to talk about would be the might be some different types of guilds that we see in different types of games. I know that in Ultima Online, you had the player killer guilds, you had the anti-PK guilds, merchant skill, you know, guilds that were almost completely devoted to, let's say, the United Blacksmiths of Britannia, started as a merchant class type guild. The EverQuest guilds, I know, I'm not completely familiar with the different varieties of guilds there. I know there are player killer servers, right, and the team based. I know they just did the deity team based ones, but within one particular server, the guilds themselves are they all the goals pretty much the same? Or are we looking at, we have thieves guilds, different types, class specific, race specific? What are some of the experiences that, or some of the guilds that you feel in the EverQuest have been? I know we have some other EverQuest players.
Well, as far as the various guilds that I've seen, they tend to, I guess, diversify as to what level the characters are. Mm-hmm. The higher level guilds, usually 3, 4, 5, a server, tend to focus on the biggest events that they can. And then you've got, so you're breaking them out in EverQuest as 50 to 60 guilds, and then you've got 30 to 50 guilds, and then low-level guilds. They tend to break out on that. EverQuest requires a variety of people to do anything. There's no, you can't just be an all-thief guild because you won't accomplish anything. So they tend to break out on level.
Do you think the game suffers for that, or do you think that's a benefit? Or?
I'm not sure that it suffers from that, but it's... You lose your diversity of the casual gamer, I think, is the one who suffers.
Right.
Those players who can only put in a couple hours a week, a couple hours a month, whatever, those are the people who suffer because they can't keep up with the power gamers. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for a guild to have serious power gamers and casual players. No matter how good the casual player is, he or she just can't put the time in.
Right.
So I think you suffer from that perspective. And then the high-level guilds tend to be very focused on a very few things. Mm-hmm. So it's you don't get the experience that you would having a wider variety of people in just because of level in EverQuest. Level is everything in EverQuest.
Yeah, I think Ultima Online is still probably the game that has the most, or would you agree, has the most variety in terms of the number of different guilds that exist within a single game?
I've not played, so...
Oh, really? Yeah, we've been in there for a while.
I agree with what you said about the casual player, though, because unfortunately I'm one of those. You know, I played EverQuest all the time, and then I went to school. And then I just had to, you know, devote time to school, and I found myself playing less and less and less. And next thing I know, I was out of the loop. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. It was more of a hobby, you know, and that's exactly why we did this, because we're focusing the casual players. you know, the people who maybe only even have 15 minutes to play. You know, we're going to give you something to play instead of killing rats. One rat for 15 minutes, you know, so.
We had a question? Yeah.
No, I did play in both systems. I played in UO and I'm currently playing in EQ. UO intentionally supports the idea of, you know, if you want a trade skill guild, go make one. You will benefit from having done so. EQ will punish this behavior, mostly. There's nothing to prevent you from making a guild of, you know, female gnome necros as long as you're willing to be level one female gnome necros forever. Or you want to hire your services out to, you know, other guilds, but in terms of having a theme, it isn't really designed to do that. You could do, in addition to the normal, you know, here's a bunch of people who all kill the same thing at the same time, you could focus on a particular trade skill without too much trouble. Most people don't for reasons not really worth describing, except trade skills aren't worth the time and effort you put into them in EQ in most cases. On our server, I think there are maybe three guilds that are aimed specifically at, we do this particular task if you need, you know, this particular thing, we're the people to see because nobody else can be bothered, and we're only doing it because it amuses us, not because there's any point to it. I think he's right. You have low-level guilds who are casual players, who are very frequently kids who all go to school together or something, and they manage to scrape together 10 of them to start a guild. You have a lot of mid-level guilds that are trying to become large guilds, and anywhere from 1 to 5, really big guilds who are killing the big things and going to places that nobody's ever been before, and very frequently getting into trouble with the management over at the game company for doing things that either they aren't supposed to be doing or weren't expected to be doing.
Do you see overall? Do you see an overall improvement trend as time goes by with the games that are being developed and their attention that they pay to people's tendency to form guilds? We have, with Shadowbane, Horizons, and a few others coming out, do you see that? Do you feel that more attention is being paid to that? Or,
well, if you take it back to the most recent large commercial release, which would be Asheron's Call, I think that one took something very similar to EverQuest and might have made it worse by introducing the allegiance hierarchy. We looked at that before the game came out. I was like, oh yeah, we can get people into like a roster and a leadership structure. And we thought it was really cool. But now you're looking at problems where the structure creates a very selfish atmosphere where you want to get people under you who are going to provide you with experience, and that's the driving focus.
Right.
All you're looking for is that person who will provide you experience. You don't care what their attitude is. You don't care who they are, what they are, how they play. You just
doesn't
want
really foster
experience,
interaction.
Right? So it doesn't foster interaction. I mean, they originally said, you know, the patron gives the vassal this item for them to join you, and, you know, it's this great teamwork thing, but it's all bullshit, you know.
Then we sign each other's mules up underneath each other.
Yeah. It's like you build up the structure just for experience. You're not building it up for the reasons of building a guild. Upcoming games, I think Shadowbane is looking really good, but, you know, we thought the Allegiance hierarchy would look really good, too. I don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, it looks like they're adding a lot of stuff to really provide structure for player-made guilds, and that's what I think is the best.
That is something.
Any place where you can like name your guild, give your guild a crest, you can put up there a web page or like a mission statement. I mean, this is stuff we put on our web pages. Basically, if a company would go to a web page and see what it is guilds put up there, you know, that they put their policies. They put their application structure, they put their rosters, communication channels, how to get a hold of us, who the leaders are, how to contact us as leaders, you know, all this stuff is, they just need to look at what the users are doing and mirror that into the game and sort of give us those tools in game to do this stuff.
You remember the original days of Ultima, where when that game was, or Ultima Online, when that game was first released, there was practically no attention paid to to guilds. Of course, there were
how
really
long
no
did it take
guilds.
For guildstones to get in the
exactly,
game?
Exactly, exactly. So,
and how easy were guildstones to use?
Yeah,
I mean, who remembers like I have to modify a title on someone, but mm-hmm. every time you bring up
the window,
the member list. Mm-hmm. It like it's randomly selected or something, so I had to like spend an hour trying to find one character.
Oh, scrolling through the list.
Well, it like does five windows, but if you have 100 people in the guild, that's not going to cover everybody. So it like selects. I don't know how the hell it worked, but it was a pain in the ass. It made managing amazingly painful.
Yeah. Now, what's the guild management interface in EverQuest like? That's something I haven't seen. Do you like it? Is it
non-existent?
Yeah, non-existent's a good way to.
Guild leader, you can make someone an officer. You can send out your message of the day. In our guild, it's a cycle between me saying, please go to Guild Magic and update your records, and somebody else saying, would you please stop whining about the Guild Magic thing? I'll do it. Mm-hmm. And that's about it, isn't it?
Right.
In EverQuest, you cannot say, give me a list of all the guild members. You can't
do
it.
So there if you see someone with your guild tag, and who's that?
Who's that? And really? We try to maintain a roster mm-hmm. on a web page. But you know, if an officer adds somebody behind the scenes without getting approval, you'd like to be able to know. But you can't. There's no way, not for an officer, not for anyone, to say, who all guild name? It won't bring up the list.
Yeah, it seems like you guys need to focus more on your internet structuring. Like, for instance, when you add a guild member, you make it email all the guilds or whatever saying that, hey, I've added this new member, you know, or chat rooms, message boards. I mean, it's totally what corporate America is doing right now, you know, and this if you didn't mention guilds, you know, this sounds totally like a corporate solution, you know. So I think you need to take the same approach.
Well, we could do that. We do some of that. It's trivial to do if you are in that industry. However, to require me to do that to play your game is a little excessive, I think.
Yeah, it just restricts the potential people that are going to play the game.
It
limits what could be there.
That's exactly what you tend to see. You tend to see, a bunch of tech heads who have the resources to stand behind the scenes and do what the game should do but doesn't. And then you have a bunch of 13 to 16-year-old kids who like to kill things and not much else, really. In the previous panel, they were talking about the lack of women in gaming and games aimed at women. And, I said, if you make a game where the point of things is killing other things and you feature female characters who start out in bikinis and male characters who start out fully dressed, you should not be, all that surprised when your player base is, teenage boys who like to kill things. That's what you're giving them. That's what you're going to get.
Well, out of curiosity, how many people have in their guild someone that, at least says they're female? Yeah, I left that long ago. In my Atriarch, we call them factions in Atriarch, and it seems that all the new upcoming games are calling, rather than guilds, they're calling it some special name that seems to fit their online persona. Like, I think Anarchy Online calls it something like your clan, and... what does Dark Ages of Camelot call it?
Dark Ages is doing its best to rip off everything they can off of EverQuest, so they're called guilds.
Oh, okay.
They were going to be called something else, but they changed it like 2 weeks ago when everybody said, my guild, my guild, my guild, and so they caved in.
Yeah. Back to the story. My guild officer's, faction officer's wife is actually in the club, and it's pretty cool to have someone that is not of the same sex in the same club.
The interesting along that side is We have a number of female players who play male characters because they don't. Those females who are females who play female characters get harassed constantly. So they play male characters so that they can play and enjoy the game and the guild and the environment without being sexually harassed by prepubescent idiots. So, you know, it's hard to tell sometimes who's a female and who isn't, but I don't know that there's any way you can moderate that kind of attitude. When you have massive multiplayer games, you're going to have not a substantial portion, but there is a portion of the game which is sexist idiots. Mm-hmm. And that hurts the female population playing the game.
Yeah, in our games, that's something that we've dealt with quite a bit. Our oldest game is Gemstone 3, which celebrated its 11-year anniversary this year. So it's very much a mature gaming environment. And there are ways to deal with it. It requires having a large online staff that's well-trained. It requires having tools on dealing with the problem players, the snurts, or whatever you want to call them. I think at the Game Developers Conference this year, the new term was grief player. Mm-hmm. And that's starting to come into very wide usage. But, yeah, there are mechanisms to do it if the corporation has the will to handle it.
I haven't played your product, so I don't know if this is possible, but those of you who are game developers, the most powerful...
Can you hold the microphone a little closer?
Those of you who are developers, the most powerful tool that you can give the players, if not the guilds, is an unlimited ignore command. You know, in EverQuest, somebody who's being a pest, you can turn them off. They no longer exist in your world. You know, mm-hmm. Okay, you're being a jerk, you're on the ignore list until it's full. And then I have to decide which of these 40 annoying people is the least annoying so that I can put this new, even more annoying jerk on the list.
Just curious, if you ignore someone, can they attack you or can they in any way impede your progress or anything?
The ignore function is a wonderful function. People can annoy you, but if they can't rub it in, then they tend to go away. The grief players that we've dealt with, they like to be able to send you messages and have you respond to them. But if they know that you're being there, that they are being ignored, they usually go and bother somebody else. The ignore function on my characters is full for all of them. You know, we got 30, I think, we're limited at, and they're all full. So I have the same issue that he does. But you know, they can train monsters on you or whatever it is, but if they can't enjoy the fruits of their labor, then they tend to go away and find another victim. Not that that's a good solution, but it's better than nothing.
For those who have just come in, want to know, are you in any online role-playing game guilds? Anyone want to?
Are we
11:10.
Okay. Is there another panel after us?
Yes, there is.
I believe there's one.
And it's supposed to start at 11:30?
Yeah.
Okay.
So any other, for those who have just come in any online role-playing guilds?
Okay.
What guild? I'm sorry?
Mithril Moon Mystics. It's on the 7th Hammer.
Oh, okay. What server do you play on?
The 7th Hammer.
Oh, okay.
And he was talking about, like, annoying people. Mm-hmm. You can put them on the ignore list, but they can walk around, like, he'll steal you and train, like he said, and that mm-hmm. can be more annoying.
There are other things that can be done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can figure out a way to stop that, because that can be more annoying than them sending you tells all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that the tendency for people to want to be away from the troublemakers and the grief players is another reason why some of the guilds are forming.
Right. The guild can help in this situation when you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those things that a guild helps with in dealing with other players. When you play in a player on a server like I am, which we call a Care Bear server, which is non-player versus player, you have limited resources. You can't get your 50 guild members over and just go and kill this person repeatedly. But it does help you. In the long run, whereas sometimes customer service staff is either unable or unwilling to intercede.
Right. Or just tied up in many cases. Mm.
Did we have a question over there? Or just, okay, Yanni. Okay.
Anarchy Online, I don't know if any of you play it. It's kind of new. Unless you're really into bugs and absolutely no customer service, I would wait another year before I bought it.
It's still a little rough.
It's still alpha, as far as I'm concerned. It hadn't even reached beta.
And did you ask for your money back?
No. It's still fun, is the problem. Mm-hmm. I've been playing an agent and a bureaucrat, and you know, in between crashes every hour or so. And I've got a gig and a half of RAM in my machine, and this thing will eat up like 700 megs of RAM if you'll let it. It's, you know, it's like I said, it's buggy. It's got huge memory leaks. It crashes. But it's fun, I guess. There's no real content to it yet, but... Mm-hmm.
Is there a guild management system in that game yet?
There is a guild system, but of course it's buggy. Right. And you can't invite people into your guilds.
You can't what?
You can't invite people into the guild.
Uh-oh. That can be a problem.
I find it amazing. You know, if they released any cars with, like, those... Like, the same philosophy that softwares go on, I mean, we'd just be... driving Flintstone cars, as far as they're concerned.
One good thing that I have seen about this, I've read into the guilds a little bit. They're more organizations than an actual guild. You can buy modifications to your guild, so the people who join you will get a bonus to this skill or that skill, or you can buy restrictions for it, so only this race can join you, or this class, or whatever. So, I mean, it gives you more incentives than any other game I've ever seen, as far as specializing your guild, if you want to be a guild of agents, or snipers, or whatever. Mm-hmm. They did a great job with the guns, too. It's pretty neat.
Does anyone else have an experience with Anarchy Online? Is anyone else playing that? Oh, really? They're coming back. Are they?
How about Asheron's Call? Does anybody here have a guild there?
The LOA's in Asheron's Call.
I'm just curious how that compares.
The Asheron's Call, the people that we went... The people that we lost to Anarchy Online, they stayed a couple of weeks and have come back. The people that went to Asheron's Call went about 24 hours and came back. So they just were not happy with the gameplay. So I don't know that they got well enough into it to discover whether or not guild structures or that, but the gameplay just wasn't enticing enough to stay.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the for those who have played Asheron's Call, the way that the chat client segment of that works, isn't it only about four or five lines of text that you can view at once? Or can you can expand that? How about an EverQuest? Is that possible to do as well? That is possible to do? Okay. So I know in Ultima, one of the only ways we were able to continue communicating was the fact that you could run it in a window and have MIRC open underneath, because there is virtually no advanced communication system in Ultima Online. Not yet, to my knowledge. It still isn't it all text above the head? No one uses the chat rooms, right.
In EverQuest, you can cover pretty much of the screen with your chat window as you would like. It doesn't reduce what you're covering up with it, so it's really easy to obscure everything that you need to actually do with the chat window. Mm-hmm. What, you know, from a guild management standpoint, what I would give a right arm for is a separate guild chat window.
So that you could specify a channel or create a room?
Yeah, you have all, you know, everything that J random idiot who's asking you for money is in the same window as the thing that's hitting you and the wind that's blowing, and every event and is all happening
play
one right
by
after
play.
The other, right?
Right.
And so, you know, if you're in a busy zone, things that you actually need to see are on the screen for a tenth of a second and roll off.
Before, right.
And so then you're trying to grab the arrow and scroll back up and say, oh, what, that was guild chat color, you know. Mm-hmm. It could have been anything, and as you're trying to catch it, you know, another thousand right. events are happening below it, you know, rolling it faster than you can scroll.
So perhaps separating the chat client function with the event notification, so to speak, would be...
Right. Okay. I see. Did someone... No?
Anyone?
Okay. Are we almost out of time?
Just a question. Does your guild have a rival, you think? Just a special other guild that your guild just doesn't like?
Our guild has about four guilds that they absolutely despise. But it's not the membership of the guild that's the issue. It's the leaders, usually two or three of each guild, who don't like each other.
The bad apples.
Well, it's not necessarily bad apples. It's just they had a different way of doing things. Whether it was loot structures or how they wanted to make command decisions or whether they both wanted to kill a Moss Snake 01 and they didn't like the way they did it. Mm-hmm. So that, and that filters down from, you know, top down. It's going to propagate to the membership, but when you get to three, four tiers down, everybody gets along just fine.
Right.
You tend to treat people as an individual rather than a group mm-hmm. in most settings. But it's the guild leadership that doesn't like each other.
Right, yeah. I know that in the Lost Order of Akalabeth, in the Ultima Online chapter, oftentimes we will go to war, we'll agree to go to war with other guilds to interact, but like, say, the Orc Guild, for instance, we want to interact with them on that level. We all get along great, you know, we talk, hey, it's all great, but it's time to fight. You know, we have those kinds of interactions. Is that something that happens in EverQuest on the player killer servers often, or is it basically every guild for themselves, or every guild for themselves?
Okay, I play on Rallus, which was the original PvP server for that. Since there is in EverQuest the function for guilds to officially go to war, mm-hmm. and that's, I don't know if it's used on the non-PvP servers at all, but it's absolutely not used on the official PvP server.
Right.
There, any war interactions usually just propagate from some misunderstanding, and then...
So it's people genuinely upset with one another?
Yes, that can happen.
Okay, I see what you mean.
In that case, just mm-hmm. that environment.
It's going to be interesting how Shadowbane turns out on that level. I don't think that you really have to agree to go to war with anyone to do so in Shadowbane. So...
Real quick, how many of you guys have like a handspring or little palm device that are in guilds? Well, why can't you guys just like get on a chat client on your handspring while you're playing EverQuest?
Some people do.
And keep tabs.
Some people do.
Like a ICQ.
You need those hands on the keyboard.
Yeah.
You got to be there.
Well, I mean, just to keep a tab of like everyone.
I do a wield. I've got two computers going, so I don't have that. So, you know, if I'm operating
well.
A Palm Pilot or something, I don't want to talk about how I'd have to operate it. That.
Touching off a side subject matter here.
Mm-hmm.
Between, anybody here heard of OGL, Online Gaming League? Been around for a while.
That sounds familiar.
They've pretty much been in existence in a lot of the old clans, groups. Some of the guilds have used it. Between Battle.net, WAN Services, MSN, you see some of the similar structures where you have these groups start up, you get some type of captain environment, co-captain or co-leader group, and it's great out of the game, but it doesn't interact with the game. And what we're not seeing in a lot of these big major game developers or some of the offshoots is we're not seeing any built-in structure, like we do online multiplayer right now, but we're not seeing any of the guild build from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you two is going to do that or for its follow-on, or is it still left window?
I'm not sure how you are referring to you two in that capacity. It's a first-person shooter. Nothing beyond, I'm not sure I can talk about this, but nothing beyond the ordinary you know, like find a server, browser. It's like an Unreal Tournament type thing where you're doing death matches, you're doing team CTF or something like that. I think Shadowbane is one of the first games that actually provides guilds with a leadership structure where they, for example, you can set up how you want your guild to be managed. Well, there's, I don't remember the names, I don't remember the exact details, but you can have like a complete monarchy where one person leads exclusively.
Oh, they
and you can have officers below
types,
that,
right.
But they have no right to do anything. Mm-hmm. And then there's cases where you can have a high council, where each person on the council gets a vote. But they have all kinds of rules where, you know, can the council vote out the leader? Like, I think there's four different types. The third one is that there's like a council, and the council can decide who the leader is by vote. And the final one is all votes are done by the entire guild structure, and they can decide everything, which is really cool because it can basically mirror the out-of-game leadership structure we have in our guild. Something we had to face when we were creating our various chapters was, you know, we had UO, we had a very defined structure where we had people who led the fighters and people who led the merchants and people who led the diplomats and such. And we took that into EverQuest when we first joined that game. And we realized this really isn't working. It took us a year to realize this, at least. By this time, now we've gotten it down to a completely different structure with four people. You have a leader, you have like an assistant leader, you have someone who manages new recruits, and you have someone who manages events. And that's it. You keep it down to exactly what the members need and nothing more. You don't want too many voices. You don't want too much mess getting in there. This stuff evolves as the game will allow. We faced almost the same thing in Asheron's Call. We brought it down to almost the same structure as EQ eventually because it only gave the users this ability. You know, this is what it allowed, and this is what we needed to run it. And I really take offense at a system where the game forces you into a structure. If you can't decide it on your own, no matter what it is, then it makes my job tougher as a leader.
Though EverQuest doesn't really force you to into any set structure, do you guys typically have a dictator or a captain at the top and then a co-captain or second in command? What type of structure does your guild usually have?
Our guild actually uses a military structure. It's got two generals, and then they go down all the way down to the sergeant level.
Very cool.
What was the guild name, I'm sorry?
Revered Souls.
Okay.
It's on the Morel Thule Silver.
Okay.
I know we've used it to deadly effect in Counter-Strike, which isn't exactly a role-playing game, but has anybody here experimented or used any type of voice-over IP stuff? Roger Wilco,
Roger Wilco,
Battlefield Commander, stuff like that?
I haven't personally, but...
I'd be curious to see how it would work in an environment like this with, you know, huge amounts of people talking. You can do sub-channels in Roger Wilco. I mean, it wouldn't be like a huge crowded room, but...
Yeah, when Tribes 2 came out, I had been on some servers where some people had attempted to use the voice over IP communications, and I noticed that one of the problems that they encountered a lot of times was that the very first part of whatever they were saying was always cut off. So, and that could get really frustrating. They would say, you would hear incoming to tunnel, and you wouldn't know, well, wait, what is incoming or which tunnel, and that kind of thing. I don't know if that's a bandwidth restriction. I don't know if that's a limitation of the
software.
They
were probably using the voice activation. If you manually key it, you don't have that kind of problem. I haven't had that problem anyway.
Right.
The big thing is finding somebody who has the bandwidth to host a server for it.
Right.
The data streams, I think, are fairly small, like, you know, anywhere around 1K a second or 1.6K a second, something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you've got a buddy who runs a network somewhere and stick one in his T1 or his T3 or
at
something.
At work, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a question for you, Ilanka. Can you spill any beans about how Hero's Journey is going to work in terms of communications? Or?
I can't because I don't know the details of it. It's not at that level of design. What we did is we had a demo videotape that we were walking around a couple of years ago, and there were so many massively online multiplayer games on the market that we had trouble getting anyone's bandwidth to do the game. So we finally decided, you know, we're already past the window of the tech specs for that one. So we basically scrapped everything that we had and we started over again. We're building a new game and we're doing it from scratch. I asked the Hero's Journey team if I could talk about Hero's Journey at Dragon Con, and they said, almost, no, next year. So I've been taking a lot of notes here, and what I'm planning on doing when I go back to Simutronics after this is going, okay, guys, can I design the guild system for Hero's Journey?
All right. Is it going to be called guilds?
Yeah, are you going to use the term guild, or is that something that...
What do you want us to call them?
Exactly. It's a fantasy genre, isn't it? The Hero's Journey is...
Oh, yeah,
fantasy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's going to be medieval fantasy. That's the genre.
Guild would work.
Okay.
It's tried and true.
I got it written down right here. Right. But, yeah, what I want to do, you know, given my druthers, you know, it's a big team, so I'm not sure, you know, how much that part has been fleshed out, is kind of go in, and then once we have some basic structure, I want to reach out to the player community and say, take a look at this design. What do you think? Is there anything big that we're forgetting?
Right.
You know, like an invite command or something like that, and then go from there. But it's something I... thing at Simutronics that we're pretty good at over the years is really listening to the players.
Right.
There are, of course, going to be some people that disagree and say, no, you suck. But
overall, been around that long.
I mean, I'm here. I'm listening. I want to hear what you guys have to say. I want to make sure that our next game learns from the mistakes of others so that we don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, one of the things while developing a single-player tile is that when I just go into a multiplayer tile, I find how limited it really is. And I'm like you, I want to be able to have, like, I would love to have, like, a guild area as, like, actually part of the game and not formed to the side, you know? But realistically, I mean, I don't see that happening because it puts the development outside the gaming company and into the users, and that's totally against their style, so, you know.
If there is one thing that I could advise you to learn from as far as other games, man, when you launch, make sure you've got enough bandwidth and server power to support what you're trying to sell.
Online was a great testament.
Every big major release, you've all experienced it, I imagine. Ultima, EverQuest, they all did it. Even Blizzard's done it, and Blizzard rocks. Just totally hosed it up. Didn't have enough bandwidth, their servers weren't strong enough, and pissed everybody off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're constantly getting the fastest processors. Currently, our flagship product, Gemstone 3, is running on a quad processor, Xeon. We've got, you know, direct fiber optic connection directly into the backbone. Originally, we were connecting to a provider that connected to the backbone. Now we're passing that, and we're going directly into the internet backbone. So we've got bandwidth from God. Yeah.
Another suggestion for encouraging guilds is a place in game where guilds can meet that's exclusive to them. And you can invite people to. It's like one of the best things about UO was that you could own housing and you could create a village for your guild, you know, a place for you all to have an identity. You can't do that in EverQuest at all. And you currently can't do that in Asheron's Call, though they say housing will be released in the next 6 months or so. But it's one of the best things for people to see each other in-game, not only out-of-game, in a place where you can do it without interference from outside griefers or whatever you want to call it. Just a place where you can gather, you know, and you can have an identity and you can, like, give people their part of this location. Like, it'd be great if each member of the guild could have their own locker where they could store some stuff.
Right.
Know,
well,
on top of banks.
I don't know if you've ever played our other games like Gemstone 3 or Dragon Realms. And I mean, you specifically asked about Hero's Journey, so that's what I was talking about. Hero's Journey, which is going to be our next major product. But of our existing games, we do exactly that. In Gemstone 3, for example, we have houses where a group of players can get together and they have their own house. To some degree, they can even design what the house looks like. They've got, you know, rooms that they can set up as private and lockable. And so we don't have some of the same problems that some of the larger graphical games may have, in that people can log into the game and they can have their meeting, their guild meeting, in the game. They can send messages to other guild members in the game. They can do the maintenance about inviting guild members or kicking out members. I mean, there's houses, there's guilds, there's all sorts of different kinds of organizations in our various games. Depending on the genre, medieval fantasy, we've got the Caribbean island sort of mystery survivor kind of thing. We've got our Hercules and Xena game. And no matter which game we do, we learned very rapidly that it doesn't matter what kind of genre the game is, players will find a way to get together, to socialize, to form their own groups. And so we always wanted to put in mechanisms to enable that. If we don't enable it, they're going to do it anyway in some way that may be detrimental to the game, so we might as well give them some sort of mechanisms that they can do so that we're happy with how they do it and they have control over what they do.
Exactly. And you get cases where where you get guilds who try and get, like, an EverQuest, you get, you know, 100 people trying to gather for a wedding, you know, and it crashes the zone,
oh,
it causes
yeah.
serious slowdown issues. And this is where you get people who want to get together and socialize or have a party or hold an event, and it is detrimental to the game. They don't give them any ability otherwise. So, you know, they're shooting themselves in the foot without these functionality.
Well, I guess you know why it's not implemented in EverQuest, then.
Are we...
Okay, one more question or comment.
Questions, comments, anyone?
Okay.
Anyone?
I'll spam the room one more time. I think we briefly touched on this. I would hope that in the developments of future, one of the things that would help tremendously is a guild treasury for the ability of the officers to access the guild bank. Right now in EverQuest, your treasury has to exist on a character, and if that character does not log in or decides that he or she is just going to destroy everything, you're just out. There's no way for anyone to access it. So a guild treasury, I don't know how that would be implemented. I don't know how easy it would be, how hard, but that would be something on the wish list.
Yeah, that was something we dealt with back in Gemstone 2 back in 1989, where basically the treasury was held in a player's inventory. And with Gemstone 3, we designed in a mechanism right there where, in fact, it was designed by Robert Woodhead, who originally did the game Wizardry. He was one of our guest game masters. I'm not sure who's heard of him, but... there's a house treasury, and the house officers can make the deposits into the treasury and track what the balance is and all that.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone.
Great.
Is this your wallet?
Thank you for
no,
your
that's not mine. Anyone's wallet?
Where's the ID?
It's mine.
What are you doing?
It's his now.
I wasn't leaving it there.